you know about it? Oh, yeah. So, and aside from the fact that Cher is a goddess, we're doing her memoir in 2020. So,
and do you know we scooped EW on that? You announced it on this show before EW announced it.
Whoops!
I just want to say that.
I'm sure there's a listen. This is all over the airwaves the day that she signed the contract. I was in Maine and practically drove off the road when my friend called me and said, "Guess what?" So, anyway, we're excited about that.
Okay. Move over, EW. We have the Henderson Library Show.
Hey-o! Anyway, so thanks everyone for listening. So this is the Library Love Fest team coming to you from HarperCollins down on Fulton and Broadway in Manhattan, and we are sitting in a conference room, and we're about to tell you about some books that we're really happy about. So, Lainey, you want to go first?
Sure. So I know we said upcoming books, but I have two leads that are out now, so you can go get them, but we have exciting announcements about them. So the first book is Pieces of Her by Karen Slaughter. So this came out in the summer of 2018, so hopefully you've had time to read it, but if not, go pick it up. If you're not familiar with Karen, this is the book to start with. It's a story of a mother and a daughter. The daughter is with her mother at lunch in the mall, and a big catastrophe happens, and she decides that maybe her mom is not who she thought she was. She thought she was a calm, level-headed woman, and now she has this man coming after her, and she has to go on the run. So Andrea is going to figure out what her mother, Laura, has as a secret, but she has to go on the run because she thinks this man is coming after her. And let me tell you, if I had to go on the lam, I would want Karen Slaughter to map my journey for me. She's so detailed, and it's so interesting. She thinks of everything. She even uses a library to do a lot of research, so fun fact. But if you have not heard, we are excited to announce that Netflix is going to do an 8-episode series of this book. So exciting, and what's even more amazing is that the production company, Made Up Stories, that is developing this series, is going to be committed to creating content for compelling female figures and then really ramping up female directors and actors and anyone in the process. So female-led, girl power, which is exciting, and it's going to be directed and produced by women, too. So that's an 8-episode series. It's coming later. We don't have the exact dates, but you'll see a lot of stuff coming out for this one. So it's Pieces of Her by Karen Slaughter. So you pick it up so you can follow along with the Netflix series.
If you haven't read Karen before, I can't recommend her enough. I think she writes sometimes very scary, pacey, twisty thrillers, but with this one in particular, Karen always writes really, really strong sister-sister dynamics and sister-father dynamics, as seen in some of her previous work. I first read, what was the first standalone that she did? Not the first standalone. It involved the two sisters. Oh, God. Now I'm
the last
sister. Let me see. But with this one, I think what's so interesting is that it's this...
Pretty Girls, Lost
Pretty Girls. Girls. Oh, my God. Pretty
Girls. Yeah, Pretty Girls is great.
Yeah, Pretty Girls is so, so good. It will keep you up. But I think this is an even better entry point for Karen in that it does explore that daughter-mother relationship, which is somewhat new for her, and again, she does it really, really well. She just writes fantastic characters that are very complex.
I have a really cool quote that I also want to read from Gillian Flynn. Simply one of the best thriller writers working today. I'd follow her anywhere.
Do you have the Rebecca Vinook quote from Booklist? But she was... it's a great quote. It must be in there.
This one? The Starred Review?
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Slaughter's talent for writing convincingly flawed yet sympathetic characters is high release here. Readers will find themselves totally immersed in a suspenseful alternating storyline and won't want either of them to end. That's a Booklist Star review.
Yeah. I mean, like Chris said, the lady said, I mean, I think we're all in agreement here that this is, this is a really accessible story, and if you're a little... You know, if you think like, well, Karen writes those kind of, she really goes dark in a lot of her books, and some people love that, and some people not so much. So if you're in the not so much category, then this is the one to pick up, because It's more psychological terror than it is physical, gruesome terror.
It does have dark stuff in it.
Oh, it does have. This
so don't worry.
This is no musical, but it's so good. It's so so good.
I'd like to see it in musical.
Yeah. Ugh. I'm killing you. I'm killing you.
Sweet God.
Yeah, right.
Also, just to continue the Karen love fest, I just think she's one of the funniest, sharpest human beings out there. She just cracks me up. There's a great interview that our own Virginia Stanley did at the Cat Cafe. You're looking at me, Virginia, like, I don't know.
You're fired.
Karen's a big cat person, Virginia, not so much, but... they have a great rapport, so I think if you go to our Facebook page, it's there somewhere. We can also send you a link if you email us, but she is just, one, a huge library advocate, which, you know, obviously puts a near and dear to our hearts. She's also just an amazing, smart, and again, hilarious human being, so can't recommend her work enough. So,
all right.
I could go on, but...
But okay. You won't, because you're fired.
Shuffling, shuffling.
Bye, see ya.
Right, meow. I thought that was going to land better. I said you're fired, right, meow.
Oh.
That didn't land so well.
I get it. All right. Lainey.
All right. It's too early, guys.
It is.
So the next is Mary Ventura and the Ninth Kingdom by Sylvia Plath. This is a new publication. You're probably thinking Sylvia Plath has a new publication, but this one is actually out, so you can get it right now. And there's a paperback and a kind of gifty hardcover, very slim, very small, only 60 pages, but it's a short story that has never been published before. It was known, but it's just never been published. And Sylvia wrote it when she was a student at Smith College in 1952. He submitted it to a magazine, and it got rejected, so it has not been published. But I love that it's just classic Sylvia Plath. I'm a big fan of her, and I think it really shows her progression into The Bell Jar. It kind of follows some of the same themes, obviously in a short story form, but it kind of shows her progression as a writer, too, because she was trying to find herself, and... at the end, she got The Bell Jar, and she was really open and honest about a lot of things. This is a little more symbolic. I just find it so funny that she described the short story as a, quote, vague symbolic tale, which is not true. It's so symbolic, and it's overwrought with all these allegories. So I think that kind of speaks to Sylvia Plath's dark humor in a way, too. It follows a girl, Mary Ventura. She's been pushed on a train to go towards the Ninth Kingdom. She has a one-way ticket, can't get off. And she goes through all these other kingdoms as she's going, but she meets different people. And there's a lot of biblical characters that come in, different symbols. And she's trying to find a way off this train. And you don't know where the Ninth Kingdom is, but you kind of get a sense that she should not be going there. And I love this description. In the book, it says train wheels that sound like guilt and guilt and guilt. And I think that's just such a great image. I really love the short story. It's a quick read. It's out now. And that's Mary Ventura and the Ninth Kingdom by Sylvia Plath. Also, we had a great interview with Rebecca Bauman, who works in the library that holds all the archive or half of the archives for Sylvia Plath's work. And it was an amazing interview done by Kim Raycon, who works on our academic side, and she talked to her about the theory of not published work and how it has been seen, and all of these researchers are doing great things to get it out there, but it kind of doesn't come into the public's mind until after it's published. You have to check it out on our podcast. That's the Library Love Fest podcast. And we did a Facebook Live, Kim and I, about Sylvia Plath in general, and we did it on Valentine's Day, which was very anti-Valentine's Day, so you have to go check it out. It's on our Facebook page. There'd be the second video loaded there.
All right, I have a special book to talk to all of you about. This is Anthony Bourdain Remembered. This is coming May 28th. So Anthony Bourdain, the loved chef, author, activist, he was many, many things. He did them all brilliantly. And, of course, as you know, we lost him last year in June. And so this is kind of a collection of insights and images and memories by those who knew him or who were influenced by him, impacted by his life. So this is a beautiful, kind of gifty book with, again, some stunning images that contain quotes from some notable people, including Barack Obama. And I have the quote that he provided. Again, this is an image of Anthony and Barack Obama sitting over this kind of casual diner table. And Barack's quote was, "Low plastic stool, cheap but delicious noodles, cold Hanoi beer. This is how I'll remember Tony. He taught us about food, but more importantly, about its ability to bring us together, to make us a little less afraid of the unknown. We'll miss him." And again, he impacted so many people, both in food but also in travel. And that's what I always found so fascinating about him, was I think he was such an insightful person and was able to communicate how to travel and interact responsibly and in a genuine way. And, of course, food is a great equalizer when it comes to that. Again, he was such an influential and insightful person, and obviously he's dearly missed, and I think this is a great kind of memento to remember how he impacted people's lives. It's just a really striking book. So that's coming May 28th. Another book that I'll talk about is American Moonshot by Douglas Brinkley. This is coming April 2nd. So Douglas Brinkley is a famed historian. His previous book was Rightful Heritage, which is kind of this trilogy about all the various historical events in America that involved kind of environmentalism. So we talked about FDR and some various other presidents. But this book is detailing basically America's race to the moon with President John F. Kennedy's challenge to get to the moon. He made that announcement in 1961. And so this is a kind of epic telling of all the buildup and the state of the nation when JFK made this proclamation. It's never been done before. And I just think about the scope of accomplishing this thing that had never happened before, sending, people into space to land on the moon. It's such an incredible feat of, coordination. And this is going to be kind of a tangent, but so I just interviewed Neal Stephenson for a podcast. He's a really great sci-fi speculative fiction author. He's a New York Times bestseller. A lot of you probably know him. But he wrote a novel back in 2015 called 70s, which is kind of about the Earth is essentially, scientists discover that the moon is breaking apart and is going to rain down on the Earth and essentially destroy everything, and then humanity has to pool their resources together to get off the Earth and survive. And that novel was really striking in that it framed how societies work together and this huge cause, and like having this epic unifying cause to bring people together. And that's kind of the feeling I got with this book, too. It's just when you put yourself back in the 1960s and this seemingly impossible task that JFK put forth, and then how that kind of reverberated through the nation, and everyone's talking about it. Everyone was sitting in front of their television watching this happen. So it's just a really epic, kind of inspiring detailing of this process. There's a big media lineup set up for Douglas. He's just a really engaging speaker, and again, this is such a major story. This is going to be published kind of in time for the 50th anniversary of the first lunar landing. So big time, a very important book, and I think it's the definitive guide to everything that was happening on the ground as we built up towards the moon landing. Really, really cool. And you'll be, again, hearing much more about this because it is a big event. So we're publishing this April 2nd. And hope you'll check it out. American Moonshot by Douglas Brinkley.
I'm going to interrupt 1 second real quick.
How are we doing?
We're doing good, and I'm going to say you're listening to a special edition of The Library Show featuring HarperCollins Library Marketing Team, Library Love Fest, and Cher.
There you go. Oh!
Back to you.
Cher opened for us.
Yes.
Cher opened for us. That's a pretty big deal.
Lucky Cher.
That's right.
Okay, so the next book is No Happy Endings by Nora McInerney. So Nora first memoir. So this is a memoir. Her first memoir, It's Okay to Laugh, Crying is Cool Too. It was so good and so special, but it came from really tough times for Nora. So she lost her husband, her father, and she had a miscarriage of her second child all in 1 year. And that's a lot to go through for anyone. I can't even imagine, but to sit down and put it in a book and come up with reflections and kind of think of things to help other people going through tough times, it's a big feat, and she did it so well, and It's Okay to Laugh. It's such a beautiful book. I think it really pays tribute to her husband and her dad and the family that she could have had, but also remembering really fun times and remembering how it's okay. Like, you can get through it, and you don't have to feel bad all the time. You don't have to feel bad. So it's such a beautiful book. I really recommend reading that one. But this is her second memoir, No Happy Endings, which really is the chapter two of loss. So, like, what do? You process this grief, but how do you move on without forgetting? And I have to say, I knew about Nora first because she is the host of APM, American Public Media's podcast, Terrible Thanks for Asking, which I love that title because it encapsulates everything that is so true. Like, just don't ask me how I'm doing, or I'm going to give you a one answer, but things are not always okay. And in this podcast, she really takes hard, tough subjects and people who are going through them and lays them out in such a beautiful roadmap of their life and paying tribute to things in their life that they want to put at the forefront, but also not shying away from the hard subjects. It's raw and open and honest, and it's done in a way that's a little bit of a mystery for the listener. So she interviews these people, and they start off just telling her maybe, like, it seems like a very normal story about, you know, their husband or their brother or their child and how they were so excited when something happened. But then she slowly moves into what happened to them, and it's usually a very hard, tough event that I can't even. It's just so, you have to listen to it because it's so beautiful. And at the end, you have tears coming, and it is sad. I don't want to shy away from that, but it is so uplifting because they have this beautiful moment in time that they sat there and reflected on what these people meant to them and maybe speak to someone going through the same thing. She just did one with a gymnast who went through the assault through the doctor and going through her life. That's one I would recommend listening to. So whatever Nora does in the podcast is what she does in the book to herself. She's really honest. It's not like, oh, everything's going to be okay. It's, I'm not okay, and that's okay. We'll get through it. So in No Happy Ending, she really just exposes this absurd question of, like, how are you? And she talks about finding happiness and holding these unhappy memories in the back and giving credence to them, even though, you know, you don't want to forget them, but you want to move on. And there might not always be a happy ending, but she shows that there's always a happy beginning and you can move forward. And you don't have to feel guilty for forgetting. You don't want to do that. Keep it, and how to do that in a healthy way. So I am a big fan of Nora. Listen to the podcast, read her first memoir, and then read No Happy Endings, which comes out really soon. It's in on March 26th. All right. The book that I'm going to talk about is called What Matters Most, the Get Your Shit Together Guide to Wills, Money, Insurance, and Life What If by Chanel Reynolds. So this is by the founder of the website Get Your Shit Together, which is a really great website, and I highly recommend you go to it, getyourshittogether.org, which was the launching off for this book. But that website started in 2013, and it quickly gained notoriety and was actually covered in the Times, and NPR and CBS Morning did a piece on her. On this author. So in 2009, the author of this book, Chanel Reynolds, lost her husband, Jose. He was struck by a car while they live in Seattle, and he was struck by a car while bicycling near their home.
And this started her down this sort of emotional and psychological and financial rabbit hole. She didn't know what to do. She aside from just grieving, she had a stepdaughter, and she and her husband had a child together, and she found herself a single mother. She was grieving the loss of her young husband, and if you go to this website, you'll see pictures of them together as a young family, and it's so heartbreaking. And so that in and of itself was enough. But she also, when the dust started to settle, realized that she didn't really know anything about their finances. She didn't know the passwords to his accounts. She didn't know about their wills and you know, all the things that you're supposed to, or you should know about, we all should know about, and most of us, or a lot of us, don't. You just don't want to think about it, but it's going to happen eventually. You need to know these things. She didn't know about power of attorney and, you know, the mortgage on their home, like all of that stuff. She left to him, and now she was stuck trying to figure it out, again, while trying to grapple with this terrible grief. So the website started first. GetYourShitTogether.org, really, really good website. And then she turned it into a book, because the book is really all of that and then some. This is not just a checklist. This is, you know, it's sort of an all-encompassing kind of a book that talks about all the psychological aspects of being, you know, thrown into this kind of a situation where you're, you know, you really don't know how to start. And don't think of this as just a checklist. Think of this as getting to know her on a more personal level. And she really does. I mean, I know I keep saying go to the website, but there's great videos of her where she's just so Mother Earthy and very accessible, and breaks down all the stigma and the fear that a lot of people have, and they just don't want to deal with all that stuff. So I highly encourage you to check that out. And so she was also the founding managing director of WorldChanging.com. She was a big digital person, and she consulted for clients like Nike and Samsung and Microsoft. So she knows, you know, she knows all of that. That background serves her well. But you know, as I say, most people are well intentioned and have, you know, they just get overwhelmed by this stuff. And I think that this is a great book, too. She came to the American Library Association. As I say, she lives out in Seattle. That's where we were. And she came and she signed a bunch of books. We talked about this book, and boy, there was a line waiting for her when she got to the booth. There's also a great New York Times piece that you can get to from her website. She actually posted it on her Facebook page. And it's an interview with these other authors, Vicki Robin and Gabby Dunn, and they're talking to Ron Lieber, and it's about their books, about money, life, feelings, and everything in between. So it's really neat. They're just sitting down at this little cafe in Seattle and talking about how they got themselves together, so financially in lots of different ways. So anyway, that is What Matters Most, the Get Your Shit Together Guide to Wills, Money, Insurance, and Life's What Ifs by Chanel Reynolds, and that actually that goes on sale March 19th, so not too long to wait for that. Do I go again? Well, what do you know about that? If I could turn back time, I would make some Secrets of Great Second Meals. That makes no sense, but I'm going to incorporate a share song into every book I talk about.
You can share your second meal.
Oh, I can share my second meal. Okay. All right. Very good. So, Secrets of Great Second Meals, Flexible Modern Recipes of Value, Time, and Limit Waste by Sarah Dickerman. This book goes on sale. Actually, it went on sale February 12th. What's today's date?
The 21st.
Well, what do you know? The book's on sale, which is good for you. So this was inspired first of all, Sarah Dickerman is a James Beard Award winning author. And she wrote an article, for Slate called In Praise of Leftovers. And it's about using leftovers to create new dishes. So this is not about reheating. Trust me. I have a copy of this cookbook right in my hot little hands, and I brought this to a radio show, not for you to see. I wish this was a scratch and sniff. You still wouldn't be able to smell it. But I have to tell you, I'm flipping through the pages right now, and it is, what, look at that,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Farro salad with broccolini and walnuts. Oh, my God, so delicious. Chris is vegetarian, and he is salivating. So good.
Can you hear our stomachs grumble?
So the idea of this book is that, as I say, it's not about reheating. It's about planning ahead when you're making your first meal so that you can have leftovers that will ingredients from the primary meal that can be repurposed into a brand new meal. I know, it sounds very basic, but you do have to think about that, because if you're making something and then you think, oh, if I just had a little more of X, I could have made a whole new thing tomorrow instead of just, you know, reheating whatever's left over and not really making. This is a recipe book for ingredients that are left over intentionally for you to make a brand new meal. That's pretty much what this is, and I think that's great, because what's worse than waste? I mean, I'm clean of throwing stuff out, and I feel terrible doing that, you know? It's like, oh, there's all this, like, you know, I don't know, cut-up turkey. What am I supposed to do with that? Well, if I had read this book and, you know, seen that if I only had a little bit of X and a little bit of Y, I could have had a brand-new recipe, and you'd never know they were from leftovers. So what's cool about this book is that it's full of full-color photographs and just really gorgeous, but also the recipes tell you what the... you know, what the extra ingredient is that's needed in order to make this thing. So for ginger scallion chicken salad with cucumbers, the extra ingredient here is roasted chicken. So, like, have extra of that, and that's sort of like your main thing that you would need to make this, and you'll have it. I know it sounds sort of, I don't know. I just think this book is very cool because too much waste, and so many wonderful recipes and dishes that can be prepared if you just think a little bit before you start your first one.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
Are there any recipes that have Parmesan cheese rinds in it?
Very funny. Who knew about that? You're hilarious.
I have them in my freezer.
Do you?
I do.
Oh, my God. All right, so obviously you watched us talking about the 7 or 8 deaths of Stella Fortuna.
I did.
Okay, which we're going to talk about.
That's a nice little
segue.
And I have good news.
What?
The guru Chris Phelan, the president of the Chamber of Commerce, has got us up streaming live, just in time for Stella Fortuna, which is great because I have the book with me.
Oh,
so
nice.
We're live on Facebook.
Awesome.
Now.
Show it online.
Awesome! Awesome! Awesome!
He is awesome. He's the king.
That's fabulous. All right, I'm just gonna read one quick quote from Booklist about this. I'm gonna stay on this for one more second and then move on, and maybe we could segue into that just because. Referring back to Secrets of Great Second Meals, flexible modern recipes that value time and limit waste. Booklist says Dickerman proves that there's more to leftovers than a quick reheat in the microwave. Anyone who has ever looked quizzically at a container of leftovers while trying to plan a new meal will find what they're looking for. Also important to note that she also talks about how to store things, how to wrap things, when to put them in the fridge, when to freeze it, when to throw it out. I'm always Googling, like, is this tomato sauce seeing a better day, or can we trust it? You know, so more than just recipes for second meals, it's also about storing and just beautiful ingredients. Oh, yes, so very funny that you should bring up the cheese rind. All right. So, wait, who's talking about that? Lainey?
It's a live book.
Oh,
love
right.
That.
I love
fine.
That. Yes.
Fine, fine. We're all going to talk about the 7 or 8 deaths of Stella Fortuna by Julia Green, associate publisher of Soho Press and a debut author for HarperCollins. And aren't we the lucky ones for having this one under our roof? The three of us are kind of in love with this book.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, it's a debut novel, and it takes place in Calabria, Italy, and it spans decades and brings you into Connecticut. And this is everything in between. Chapin City's two sisters, primary characters in this book about immigration, about growing up in Calabria, Italy, in this poor little but beautiful village and their story about living there and immigrating here and everything that happens in between. That is a broad strokes definition of this book. But one of the, and we can talk more about it, but one of the, staying on the cheese rind theme, one of the things that Echo Press, which is the imprint that publishes this book, did was create a booklet, a recipe booklet, and they are recipes that are inspired by the fictional characters in this book. These characters, by the way, are loosely, or not so loosely, based on Juliet Grahame's grandmother and great-aunt. And so she knows of what she speaks. She comes from this beautiful, big Italian family, and they love food. And so in this booklet are recipes, as I say, that were inspired by the characters in this novel. So Chris and Lainey and I decided to make some of this stuff and bring it in and show it on our Facebook Live. And the recipe for the tomato sauce called for Parmesan cheese rinds. And I thought, who's got that laying around the house? And apparently that's a thing, because we did, and I didn't even know it. And apparently you did, Jennifer Winberry.
I do.
So tell us about your cheese rind.
I keep them all the time. Because you never know when you need them. I also keep, I must admit, the odd bits of celery that you see. My freezer's full of stuff.
And that's been our segment on sometime. Tell Us About Your Cheese Rind.
Now I wonder if I have a cheese rind.
It would have had to get there on its own.
Who knows?
It's walking down the street right now, Chris. Well, do you guys want to talk about the Stella? Sure. So the... to talk about the seven or eight deaths part, so Stella growing up and all throughout her life has kind of had these near-death experiences, and you find out more about them, so I won't spoil them. They're very intriguing and very... it's beautiful the way she wrote them, because when you read the chapter titles, you think, oh, okay, I don't know how that's going to play out, but then I think it's... she does a great job of putting them in kind of the human experience, and it's all of these things, some of them that people go through every day, some a little more odd, and they think that maybe Stella's cursed because she keeps having these near-death experiences, but then it really speaks to kind of the female experience in a way, too. It's really these things that are happening to her kind of chipping away at her just human spirit in a way. So it is kind of like a death, and I think there's some poetry in the way she writes that as well. But she also said that this is not just about it's about immigrants, which is, it's a great story of immigrants, but it's also just a female experience and growing up in a world where it's not always in your best interest to be female. So I think she wrote it for all women, all immigrants, to show really the compare and contrast of that life. But it's just so gorgeous, and I say that I, like, wept at some parts for Stella, because you just feel for her so much. And she's a go-getter, though. She wants to make her best life with what she's given.
Juliet can just write. Like, she has this just a beautiful voice that's really striking just from the first page. And there's a lot to love in this book. And part of it takes place in Calabria, like we mentioned, and then immigrating to Connecticut, ultimately. But what I found really fascinating early in the book, so Stella, as we mentioned, has this habit of almost dying, doing seemingly normal, everyday tasks. And when they're trying to explain this, they're citing some kind of... Calabria is interesting in that it's been colonized by, like, at least three or four different civilizations. And so you have this cultural mashup of beliefs and religions and histories that are all kind of maintained within this culture, this Calabria, Italy, just on the southern tip of Italy, very isolated, but also, again, kind of forged by many different cultures. But as you follow Stella and you have the older people within this small village trying to explain, like, what did Stella do? Why is she almost dying reaching for an eggplant, for example? That's one of the near-death experiences. And you have this very interesting mashup of, like, old world religion mixed with Christianity, because they're all Catholic at this point. And so you have these older kind of members of this village trying to explain Stella's curse, and some think it might be the ghost of her, in this case, older sister who died in infancy. She was the first Stella who died in infancy. And so it's really cool because they're kind of like, they're praying for her and subscribing to these church beliefs, but also mixing that with older religions as they try to ward off this evil force that seems to want Stella dead. But that's also just a very small part of this book. I think Stella and her experience as a woman, the experience of her mother as a single mother in Italy while her husband is off at war, and then after that, kind of doing his own thing. This is a very woman... It's a story of female power, really. I guess that's an agency and how you navigate a very tough, tough world that really fights against that. It's beautiful, and we have so many amazing quotes on this book, and if we want to go through some of those, there's a lot of love. So,
well, we got a quote from Nancy Pearl, who everybody knows and loves, librarian, action figure, and author of George and Lizzie and that whole book last series. And so she loves this book. She says, right from the first page, I was transported to Calabria, Italy, and into the lives of Stella Fortuna and her sister Tina. Spanning decades from the native beauty of their mountain village to the suburbs of Connecticut, this is a heart-filled, cinematic story of immigration, love, family, and resilience. An unforgettable novel with characters I don't think I'll ever forget. Ugh. And it's true. I mean, we find ourselves just kind of like... I mean, I know when I was reading this thing, I kept thinking about them. I kept thinking, you know, where were they? How were they? What's happening to them next? Mm-hmm. I can't wait to get back to this. I can't wait to get out of this meeting and go read this book.
Yeah, they're so alive. Like, they really do jump from the page. Like you said, they're so well-written, so genuine. And that makes it harder to read at some point. I mean,
yeah.
As far as because you care so much. Mm. And these women do face some very daunting prospects at times. But what keeps coming back is the characters. I mean, Stella and her sister. Stella's sister. I don't say lightning rod. I'm trying to think of this. She's like she's the core of the story, obviously, and she gives it weight, but she also just makes it such a joy to read and follow her throughout this. Again, obviously hard times at points.
But it's also funny. I mean, I find myself laughing at that book too. I mean, it's not we're not portraying like a dark picture. There are moments where it's like, I don't know. I mean, we all come from somewhere. I mean, I imagined my grandmother at 13 years old coming over by herself on a boat. I mean, what was that like for her? So, you know, these kids didn't speak English. So there's a lot of just the natural concern for these characters that you've sort of fallen in love with by the time they're coming over. But there's also a lot of humor in this book, too. It's kind of like life. I think that's why we all respond to it so much, because it is so realistic and it is so relatable.
What's cool, too, is that a lot of these stories kind of weave in and out of Juliet's actual family history.
Yeah.
She won't tell you what's true and what's not, but she said... like taking a funny story that might be like an anecdote at family Thanksgiving, like, oh yeah, grandpa forgot to pick us up when we arrived on the boat. And she's like, but taking that and like, we make fun of it now at the Thanksgiving dinner, but what was that like? You were forgotten in a country you didn't know. You didn't want to be here. And now you arrive and you don't have a ride where you need to be. You don't speak the language. You don't have money. And taking that and exploring it. And she's like, how does that become funny, like making the best of these family stories that are tragic.
Right. Yeah, that scene really stands out in the book, too. It's like, oh my God, they're turning the lights out and they're still sitting there waiting for somebody to pick them up. And they don't know, they don't speak the language. Where is this guy, you know? And then you're right. Then it's like years later, it's like, yeah, grandpa forgot to pick this whole thing. That was such crazy. I don't know, but it's crazy because we all tell those crazy stories. It's like, you know.
I know my grandpa tells stories like that all the time, and they're very sad, but he makes them funny because it's a way to deal with things.
Right, right.
And I think that's what really I resonated with, a lot. Uh-huh.
So that's The 7 or 8 Deaths of Stella Fortuna. What's the on-sale date? May 7th. So if you're listening, if you're a librarian, if you're voting on Library Reads, and we hope that you are, please consider voting for that one because we are just so excited about that publication.
And you can go to our website and just see anything you could ever want to know about 7 or 8 Deaths of Stella Fortuna. LibraryLoveFest.com, and it's at the top of the page.
Yeah, there's great video. There's great everything. Great podcast. All this stuff. It's so good. We can't stop talking about it. Mm. All right.
Love.
Love, love.
Okay, and can I interrupt one more minute?
Yes.
Please. Before you get on to Perfect Fraud, a book I absolutely need, you were listening to The Library Show on Hunterdon and Chamber Radio. I'm Jennifer Winberry, and I am joined by the Library Marketing Love Team. Are you happy, Mother? Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you, Mother. Well, last time, it was, whose birthday was it? Your birthday?
It was my mother's.
Your mother's birthday. That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we've already passed her half birthday, but nonetheless.
Wow.
She passed half birthday.
Yeah. Next time we'll do it on her birthday, and we'll send her a cake.
Okay.
Okay.
With Parmesan cheese rinds.
What? Right.
Which she also has in her freezer.
The next book up, yes, you do need this book. And P.S., this author lives in Titusville, New Jersey, so all you
no
need
way.
To want, huh?
No way. We have to have her at the library.
Yes, you do, because she's written a really amazing book, and you're going to want to have her there, because she is pretty talented lady. This is The Perfect Fraud by Ellen LaCourte. This book is not going on sale until June 18th, so we have lots of time to get the word out and get people to come to the library to meet her, because you're going to want her there. She's just delivered such a cool, twisty, powerful novel. So this is a story about two women. As I say, it's a debut thriller, and it's about two women whose lives intersect at a point in both of in time when they both meet each other. So, the first person that we meet is Claire, and she's living in Arizona, and she's dodging phone calls from her mother. Her mother is a psychic, and they have the daughter Claire is in the family business, except that she doesn't really have the she doesn't have the goods. She doesn't have the gift. So she thinks, she feels as if she is a fraud. And so she really doesn't want to tell her mother, and so she's kind of avoiding her. Then you fast forward and you meet this other woman across the country, on the other side of the country. Her name is Rena. And she is a young, single woman with a 4-year-old daughter. The child is ill, and no matter what this woman does to try and get to the source of her ailment, she doesn't. She's at her wit's end. She's taken her to specialists. She's gone she's relied on social media, other mothers, trying to find out, you know, what is wrong with her, and she's only getting sicker. When these two women, Claire, the daughter of the psychic, and Rena, the mother of the sick child, meet by chance on an airplane, their lives intersect, and they realize maybe they can help each other before it's too late for this poor child. Now, this is more than just a domestic sort of, you know, I don't know. It's a thriller. It doesn't sound like a thriller, but it is a thriller. There's witchcraft. There are elements in this book that set this book aside. There's psychics, there's witchcraft. It's more than your traditional psychological thriller. We have great quotes in from this for this book. Lori Frankel, who wrote This Is How It Always Is, she's that was a Reese Witherspoon book club pick. I love this quote that she gives us, because I think it really sort of just, you know, pulls it all together very, very succinctly. The Perfect Fraud is equal parts dark, creepy thriller, and compelling character study, with a little bit of magic and a little bit of heartbreak thrown in for good measure. Mothers and daughters, hindsight and clairvoyance, sickness and health twist and trade places in a delicious, slow simmer and in ways we never see coming. And gluten-free eating finally gets the send-up it so richly deserves, which I love. That quote is hilarious. But all of that was what I'm trying to say. It's like it is more than a character study about this woman who doesn't want to fail her mother, and this mother who doesn't want to fail her daughter. There's so much darkness and twisty stuff going on there, too, but I can't really tell you too much about it because it'll ruin it for you. There's another great quote by Amy Molloy, who wrote The Perfect Mother, which was such a good book. And it says, this is really good, be sure to set aside a full few hours, because once you begin, you won't be able to stop. The Perfect Fraud is exactly what a good book should be. a dazzling plot, unforgettable characters, emotional depth, all presented in a fresh new voice that is sure to make Ellen LaCourt a household name. Boom! So I hope you consider having Ellen LaCourt at your library. As I say, she's right in New Jersey, and the raves keep pouring in for this book. And we have a winner on our hands here. This is just a great book about two strong women with dark secrets. And the tagline attached to this book is it ever too late to see the truth? So, compelling, right down to the very last page, and a twist you won't see coming. That is The Perfect Fraud by Ellen LaCourt. Ta-da!
Ta-da!
Yeah! God, I love when we do good books, and that's goody. Who's next?
I think I am up. Yes, indeed I am. So, I have The Wonder of Lost Causes by Nick Trout. Nick is, by all counts, a pretty amazing human being. He's a staff surgeon at the Angel Animal Medical Center in Boston. Actually, I think it's in Waltham, which is a funny history for us. We had
Chris is just tripping down fun memory lane.
Yeah, fun memory.
Did I mention he was fired?
Fun for punishment.
Yeah, fun for punishment. You'll be hearing about this in HR right down the hallway.
Right there. They can probably hear us. An amazing human being, and he also wrote the New York Times bestselling memoir, Tell Me Where It Hurts. And this is a novel that is in part pulling from Nick's own experience in that he has a daughter who suffers from cystic fibrosis. So this is a very personal novel. It's an emotionally powerful novel, but very hopeful. It's very much for fans of An Unexpected Grace or A Dog's Way Home. And it's about a single mother who's a vet, Dr. Kate Blunt, and she lives with her son, Jasper, who has cystic fibrosis. And Kate is busy and stressed and obviously concerned about her young son's well-being. And working in this medical hospital or this animal hospital, she sees a lot of dogs specifically come and go, and based on having a sick child, you would think having a dog in the house is a no-go, which is what she subscribed to. But then, this kind of it's described as an ugly dog, Whistler, comes in, and he forges this almost immediate connection with her son, Jasper, in just kind of unexplainable, mysterious ways, but they connect. And so this book kind of goes through Kate's, coming around on this dog, exploring the relationship with the dog and her son, and just kind of the healing powers that this dog brings to the door. As a confessor and dog fanatic, specifically shelter dogs, it's just something I really believe in, and I just think it's such an important message. I think this just checks all the boxes for what a good novel can do, which is, make you cry a good ugly cry, which I love to do, but also give you hope and warmth. It's a very warm novel that I think will also teach you a lot about what it is to, one, be a single mother, but also what it is to have a child who, we all want to shelter our children as much as possible, particularly sick children. That's something they become very used to, as people walking on eggshells around them, because they think they're gentle and fragile and need to be protected at all times. But children like this, I think, is the most important thing, is to be treated like a normal kid, because that's what they are. They're normal kids. And I think the best way to connect with a child is with a dog. Dogs are these magical, healing creatures, especially old dogs. There's just something special about a good old dog. So I can't recommend this novel enough. It's just really, really good. So that's The Wonder of Lost Causes by Nick Trout, coming April 30th.
And you say the dog's supposed to not be cute?
I know, the dog on the cover
old?
Is super it's cute. Well, it's just old, so people have puppy syndrome.
Yeah,
people like
older.
And that's a scary thing.
But he's
for
learned.
Dogs.
He knows the world.
He does.
He knows how to heal.
Dogs settle into themselves just like humans. They get comfortable with themselves, and they know how to interact with people. And I think, people with old dogs are just scared, because that's a commitment that might not last very long. But they also are ones who really need a home, because they're often in shelters, and they have such incredible abilities to connect with human beings and children. The positive effects of having a dog and an old dog in the house are myriad. I could go on and on, but I think you should read the novel. That's the best way to start. go to your local shelter and hug some dogs. So I'll get off my soapbox, but I do think it's a special message. So please check it out. And I'm still up, still talking. This is Chris. Hello. Hello, hello. Next novel is Cemetery Road by Greg Iles. This is a big deal for us. Greg is a number one New York Times bestselling author. He did the Natchez Burning trilogy, which started with The Bone Tree, The Natchez Burning, and then finally Mississippi Blood. This is a standalone novel, which is a great way to get introduced to Greg, who writes these big kind of epic, they're kind of described as Southern Gothic, Faulknerian novels that often deal with the South, Mississippi specifically, and kind of the vast social and economic disparities in the South. But they're just great, thrilling stories as well. And with this one, we follow this young man, Marshall, who left his small Mississippi hometown at a young age and went on to be a very, very successful journalist in Washington, D.C., a political journalist. But there's certain things happen where he needs to kind of get out, and he returns home. His father's dying, and his mother, who runs the local newspaper, was just floundering at this point. So he just kind of goes home with no epic intentions. He just wants to help his parents out. But he gets involved with this murder case where essentially this archaeologist is found murdered, and the richest, kind of most powerful man in this small town is accused. But then also the wife of this suspect also winds up dead. So you follow Marshall as he's kind of getting to the bottom inadvertently. He doesn't plan to get involved, but he gets involved with this case, and there are deep, deep-seated kind of power plays that seem to be at the center of all of this, and they lead all the way back to Washington, D.C. So you have this really kind of epic, you know, these power brokers, these underground societies that are pulling strings within these communities. It's just a thrilling page-turner with a lot of twists and turns therein. And it has a great kind of like family dynamic because Marshall's also previously involved with this rich guy's daughter-in-law in this case. It's twisty and juicy, but I think Greg just has a very fluid, established voice that I absolutely adore. And all his books get amazing reviews, and this one is no exception. So I'll just read a few. 2-star reviews from Booklist and Publishers Weekly. Booklist says, Iles has made Mississippi his own in the same way that James Lee Burke has claimed Cajun country and Michael Connelly has remapped contemporary Los Angeles. They will be talking about this one for quite a while. That's Booklist star review. And then Publishers Weekly says, a compulsively readable thriller, Iles once again delivers a sweeping tale of family dysfunction, sexually charged secrets, and the power of wealth with an overlay of violence and Southern sensibility. I think as far as Southern crime authors go, there is Greg. And there are other people too, great authors, but Greg is at the top. And he's also just a genuinely cool, engaging, insightful human being. I've had the pleasure of meeting him at a previous conference, library conference. And he has so many great stories and just a great voice, and he's very personable. He's a real joy to listen to him speak. So, what else can I say? Read it. It's coming soon. It's March 5th, so you don't have to wait very long. And that's Cemetery Road by Greg Iles. And I will stop talking for a moment. Virginia's fired me now like 3 times. So I'm out.
I fired you twice.
Strike.
Oh, so
you're on your third strike. They're watching.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. If you talk too much, I might fire you. We'll see what you depends on what you say.
Jeez. How are we doing, Jennifer?
We're doing great. It's almost 11 o'clock. So if you're just ready to tune into the usual library show, Jim Thatch is off in Vermont. Didn't get enough snow here. And I'm talking to the Library Love Fest marketing team from HarperCollins.
All right. Okay. So the book that I'm going to talk about is The Quintland Sisters by Shelley Wood. How many people listening remember the story of the Dion quintuplets?
That was a big deal, and that is the story of these quintuplets born in Canada. I'm trying to think of the year that that actually happened. Five Tiny Miracles, born to French farmers. I'm not sure if that was the year that they, well, 1934 is the book. Anyway.
I'm looking it up.
Chris is looking it up. Oh, he's got his job back. anyway, this is historical fiction based on that particular event in time, which was quite an oddity. This is their story, and it is centers on this woman who is a midwife. She's 17 years old, and she's assisting with the birth of these quintuplets. However, this in the book, it takes place in 1934. Is it 34?
That's it. It's 34.
Okay, so it takes place in northern Ontario in 1934. Of course, it's 1934. There are no sonograms, so nobody knows that this woman is going to deliver five babies. And so this is a thing. They're all sort of, you know, sort of shocked and horrified, including this kid who is helping her deliver these children. They were French farmers, the husband and wife, and then they have the 17-year-old girl in the book who is the midwife. So she cares for these children, and, you know, it's tough in the very beginning. They don't know what's going to happen. They're naturally very underweight, and there's not a lot of money. And this couple already had five kids. So this was, you know, more than they could possibly handle. And the children were actually removed from the family and made wards of the British king. And this in this novel, this young midwife signs on as their nurse because she's getting very attached to these little babies. So they have... they set them up at this sort of this built-in this playground, and they have daily visitors. It's the height of the Depression. They have like 6,000 people coming every day, and they're just, I mean, it's so strange. They're just coming to watch them. They dress them all the same, and they're basically watching them through a one-way piece of glass, and that the kids can't see them. They're looking at them, and they're watching them play because it's an oddity. And the tourism dollars are pouring in. In the book, the midwife is, she doesn't see them as oddities. She's getting very attached to all of them and sees each one of these girls as unique. And she records every twist of events in her private journals. It sort of goes on, and she's, there's a fight of custody and revenues, and it gets, you know, it gets very complicated and very political, and she is torn between this fishbowl, the wider world, and these children. Now, the author has done meticulous research into the lives of the Dion quintuplets, and so while this is framed in fiction, the story is very true to life. On Edelweiss, if you go to Edelweiss, you can read a very interesting piece by the author as to how she came to this story, why she wrote it. And she also includes a reading list and pulls from contemporary articles the stories of the day. So, again, just a strange story for its time, and no one saw this coming, and no one really knew how to handle it. This became a circus. This is perfect for book clubs because it does, as they say, dip into moral questions about the government of Canada taking the children because the parents were impoverished. And did this do more harm than good? And was it right? And et cetera. So there's a great PS section in this book, which goes on sale March 5th. So I encourage you to check that out and go to the Edelweiss page because there's just a ton of information on there that, just tells you more about the actual story and why she came to write this particular historical fiction. That's The Quintland Sisters by Shelley Wood.
Okay. I have a new novel from a beloved New Jersey author, Under the Table by Stephanie Ivanovich. So this is another author who is extremely entertaining. Stephanie is a larger-than-life personality, described in copy. I'm not describing her as this loudmouth, big-hearted. She was one of the first authors I actually met when I started this job back in 2015, I think, when she came to the American Library Association Midwinter Conference in Boston. And it was pretty striking. She's extremely warm and, again, just kind of this huge personality and irreverent and hilarious. I think she's just so, so funny and quick. And she's a New York Times bestselling author of Big Girl Panties, just to let you know, frame her work. And then her last novel was The Total Package. So if you've read her before, you know, again, she writes very, very fast, hilarious, heartfelt romance.